I'll let Brenda go first. I know I've spoken a couple of times.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Okay, so a couple of things. One, we did expand the pool of existing candidates. I think Tracy is misconstruing what she appears to think is happening, but there was an already existing pool of 16 finalists. And the LSB, since it was excluded from most of the PD search process because the PD search committee didn't give regular reports, asked to have the pool expanded to 16 so we would have access to all the resumes and all the audio files of those interviews. Now, there was also an additional vote to expand the pool to 5 candidates, not eliminating, not dictating how those 5 candidates would be chosen, except through an STV vote. That's it.
Ed? Yeah, in light of what Tracy was saying and John's recommending, I have to support Tracy's statement and John's. I understand John's concern for the urgency to move things along. And again, as taking Lydia's advice, I'm not getting into any of the salacious, dirty details of actually everything that actually did happen. We're just talking now about policy and safeguarding the foundation from exposure to legal liability. And therefore, I'd have to say I'll support Tracy's motion and rather than John's substitute. And that's all.
Bob? Oh, okay, well, you know, as one member said earlier, anyone on a board can claim that they did or
didn't. Hi. Hi, Aki.
Excuse me. Anyone?
Sure, give her another piece of paper.
Who is that? This it's yourself.
Okay. Anyone can claim that they did or didn't read a resume or, you know, or a package of materials or whatever, and it's really hard to hear with all this background.
Would whoever's got a conversation going on in the background, please mute yourself. What's happening?
It sounds like Sasha Putin.
Oh. Sounds like it got for a moment. Good, Bob.
Okay. So, ultimately, nobody can come into your private house and determine, you know, can put a camera on you and say, you didn't actually read the resume, whatever. So this whole thing is based on something that's, you know, completely unverifiable in the first place. So the idea that anyone...
A point of information on that.
You know, you can't interrupt people with a point of information.
Comment, and then I'll take your point of information, Ken.
Okay. So what I'm saying is I don't think that really is any factor in what's going on here, is what people say they did or didn't do in the way of consideration. There's, you know, information must be equally made available to every board member, and then what the... Can someone please mute?
This sounds like dishes in the background. Would you mute your phone if it's at all possible? It's your source of the noise. Hasn't happened yet. There's still a background conversation coming through. Please mute your phone. Just if you're not calm, mute your phone.
All right, I'll try again. So, in any case, what I think is the key factor, and we heard a member say earlier that they got expert advice from an HR director. I mean, you know, other people are giving their own.
There's a woman's voice in this. Sounds perhaps a member of the board of the committee. Would you please mute your phone if you're not actually speaking?
All right. So, in any case, aside from what anyone's individual legal opinion might be, and I'm not aware that there's any attorneys on this committee, but in any, but even so, I mean, the HR directors that Pacifica has had have been precisely hired to have this kind of knowledge. So I think that's more definitive to me than somebody's personal interpretation. And the case that's been made is, you know, very logical that, that what's key is equality of access to the information. What people do with it, there's, you know, we can argue all day what they should or shouldn't do, but ultimately we can't verify what they did or didn't do. So it doesn't matter anyway, as long as it's absolutely provable that they had the access to the information. So that's it. So I don't think any motion should be passed to interfere with the process underway.
And you heard the point of information?
Yeah, all of the interviews and resumes. Somebody turn off the speakerphone. All our interviews and resumes were kept in secure location at the station by the chair of the committee. And we have a record, and we know who came in and who read the resumes and who listened to the interviews. So, and we know who didn't. So that's not true. And also, we can't distribute the material to people because we have an obligation to keep the material, to try to keep the material secure for confidentiality. So it's an appropriate thing to keep the material secure. Again, I just support Tracy's motion.
And is that record of who looked at what? Is that confidential information also?
I don't know.
This is Don. I don't know either. I think it's
I think the information about a record of who came in has been maintained by the chair of the committee, so I'm sure it's available to the LSB.
That's correct.
Tracy for the stack. Although I'm hoping that we'll vote soon. I guess there's no such thing as calling the questioning committee, so, oh well. To address what Bob said, it's not really a question of we don't know or we can't prove. There are emails in existence with people saying, I listened to 3 of the interviews or 6 of the interviews. One that I possess says, I only listen to 4 of the interviews. That's all I'm going to listen to. It would be a waste of my time to listen to any of the others.
I'm never going to do it.
So the fact of the matter is we do know that. But the fact of the matter is that we do know that individuals themselves have made discriminatory choices in terms of accessing the information.
Thank you.
Sasha, we can hear you. And okay. So the point is that we do have information in writing, of all things, that individuals have exercised what we would call discriminatory or unequal access to the candidate material. So it's not a speculation. I mean, it's a fact. And if it's been written in an email, then anybody can get their hands on it, and anybody might. So I don't think that we really have much of a choice here but to act.
This is Lydia.
This is a question for Tracy. If the LSB were to, in this vote coming up Wednesday, that if it's a two-part question.
Okay.
Do they have any legal responsibility to look at all of the candidates' things? I mean, is there anything that says that they have to, together they have to have equal access, but is there anything that says that they actually have to, saying anything in the California law, you're not a lawyer, but you're making the point important.
Yes. I understand the question.
Exercise the access.
Yes. Okay, you said it was a two-part question. Is there another part, or should I answer that part as I understand what the answer is?
Should they choose to access, supposing that they do, that they have an obligation to actually do as much with any candidate as they do with the other candidate, which depending upon the answer. The first might be that they don't do anything at all, but that they don't look at anything. But assuming that they have an obligation to do equally for each person,
mm-hmm.
Should they do that before Wednesday? Is there any objection then to them do it, you know, voting on a 16-member pool to get a 5-member result?
Okay. Let me handle that in order. There are various rules relating to hiring. EEOC is not the only one, and that's the one that I've looked at because it seemed the most applicable to this particular situation. What it basically does, and some of this was sent out to the PMD, is it imposes an obligation on the employer to demonstrate that any candidate in a protected class was treated throughout a hiring process entirely equally and in an entirely equilateral manner with any other candidate, if in fact that candidate is then eliminated from a hiring pool. In other words, the burden is upon the employer. They can't say, well, this is our general practices. We never read resumes or listen to interviews before we vote on people. That's not acceptable because individuals in a protected class have an absolute right to guarantees of equilateral treatment. So essentially, it's fine, although I don't approve of this, and this is the sort of unengaged voter argument that John was making correctly. It's not an EEOC violation for individuals to vote who looked at none of the resumes and looked at and listened to none of the interviews, unless someone can document that, for example, they voted to fire someone because they had a foreign-sounding name or they would only vote for men, not women. But that's hard to document. But it is, however, problematic for any individual member of that LSB to have reviewed the resume of some candidates and not the other, and not others, or to have listen to a selection of the interviews, but not all 16, because in that case, individuals in a protected class have not been given an equilateral opportunity to prove their fitness for the job. And there's an absolute burden on the employer to document that individuals in a protected class have been given an absolutely equilateral chance at the position and have in no way have less of a shot than members of unprotected class. So that's basically the way that the law goes. So it's all or nothing, and the problem is basically inequality. So the scenario would be is the way you document that you haven't done that is that all members of the LSB go through certain things, and you can document that they've done that. In terms of the motion, what would be helpful is if, in fact, there is a smaller pool, you know, a same-sized final hiring pool, then what LSBs normally do, at least when I participated in hiring processes, this is what they've done, is you bring in your final pool of candidates and then you go through an interview with the whole LSB, and then that guarantees equilateral access for all of those candidates in the final pool. Alternatively, you can document that whatever number of people in the final pool have had, you know, the same exposure, that each individual has had the same exposure. But if you can't document it, then you're leaving big openings, especially when you've got emails flying around about, I listened to 40 interviews, I listened to 7, I listened to 3, I listened to 12. I mean, that's just suicide. So did that answer your question, George?
First one.
All right.
Second question was, should the LSB choose to provide equilateral access
mm-hmm.
by each individual person doing the same thing, with whether it's nothing or everything,
mm-hmm.
in candidate? Is there any problem then that you see with that vote going forward?
What you would need to document is that because obviously people have looked at some resumes or the other, so what you would need to be able to document is that each LSB member has access to all 16 resumes and the opportunity to review them, and then you would need to document that any individual that has listened to any interview whatsoever, and I believe that's most of the board, has listened to all 16. If, in fact, you want to work with a pool that big. And I don't see that you could do that by Wednesday.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else want to speak to this?
This
okay.
is Lydia.
Oh, good, Lydia.
Yeah, and, you know, at issue here, too, beside the fact that I actually think that we can document enough for EEOC, and when we wrote the bylaws, these issues came up, by the way, and whether to put in there the option of having a search committee versus the entire LSD serving as the search committee, which the bylaws allows, but did not mandate one or the other. But the other issue here is this notion that the PMB can come in and swoop down and undo anything the LSD does. Back in 99, as you know, the labs, and we were only local advisory boards, and I was the second person on that suit, sued because of that overreach on the part of the PMB. And what the court recognized was that the PMB doesn't exist except for the fact that the LSBs are in that time, it was just the advisory boards, create the members, seat the members, elect the members to the PMB. So it is not the traditional structure of, oh, the LSB was created by the PMB as its committee. That is something that did not escape the logic of the court, and so we were given standing. And so I caution against the PMB trying to overrule particularly directors and others who are not at KPFK. And those that are at KPFK, as we know, we have slates and we have all this partisanship. So, but to be dragged into it when you don't know what you're talking about, and clear from, and again, I can't open up all of the particulars beyond that. But as a governance issue, this would be overreach. You can be tested again, but, you know, there you go.
Our poll for start?
Oh, our poll, go ahead.
Yeah. Yes, there. I remember the lawsuits and all of that years ago, and that was a different structure. My understanding is that things are so different now because of the very bylaws themselves. The bylaws say that the PNB can reverse some decisions by the LSBs. The bylaws also say that the LSBs are a committee of the PNB, and the PNB is not elected by the LSBs, it's elected by the delegates' assemblies. And there are supposed to be, anyway, separate meetings for delegates' assemblies and LSBs. And so I think the old argument from 99 was done away with by the bylaws that were finally done at the end of, 2003. So, so I don't think you can use the logic of the old way because the old way just isn't there anymore. That's it.
Okay. Let me go to a vote on this now. Any objections to going to a vote on it? Okay. We'll take John's substitute first.
Hello, this is Sasha. Can you not hear me?
I couldn't hear you before when
I'm sorry, I've been asking to be on the stack.
Okay, go ahead, Sasha.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I must have had it muted and I didn't realize that I thought I unmuted it. I wanted to say a couple of things here. You know, first of all, the LSBs are they're the local governance organization for the station, and they are far more familiar with what's going on there at the station than anyone else. And more control in the last couple of years has been wrested from the local station boards and put in the hands of the PNB, and I find that really problematic. Then in terms of these various motions that are on the floor, you have a really serious problem when you start saying you're going to eliminate people because they haven't done their homework enough and not allowed them to vote, or because they voiced an opinion and therefore you're not going to allow them to vote on an LSB. I mean, I just can't even begin to tell you how much trouble that will get you into. In terms of information out there that people have been saying and how seriously they've taken their responsibilities either as committee members or as board members in terms of reading and listening to absolutely everything, you know, We've only had executive director in my 6 years on the board here at KPFA. We've only had executive director search committees, three of them. I was chair of two. And let me tell you, there are people who don't show up to meetings regularly to the committee. There are people who don't read everything through thoroughly. Ditto for people on the board. I mean, this is just commonplace. If you're going to legislate that whenever that happens, you can't have a vote, we aren't going to be able to get anything done. This is ridiculous. I mean, we are trying to legislate down tooth and nail, and to tell you the truth, it feels to me like a group at KPFA wants to really control what's happening. And from my point of view, allowing all the candidates, 16 of them, to have a shot at this is much fairer than allowing five of them to. And if that's what the local board wants to do in Los Angeles, then I say we have no business interfering. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak? Okay.
George, I got you.
Yeah, John.
I listened to what Paul said about my motion, and unfortunately, I agree with him. I wish I could pass a motion in this amount of time. It would meet his objection, but I don't have one, so I'm transferring my support to Tracy's motion.
Okay.
So hopefully that'll expedite the, you know, the processing of these things.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak to this? Okay. Let's take a vote first on John's...
Wait, motion. Can I withdraw my motion? Can I withdraw my motion?
With unanimous consent, you can, yeah. Does anyone,
okay,
object, does anyone object to John withdrawing his motion? Okay. No one objects. Thank you, John.
Sure.
So what's on the floor, then, is Tracy's motion, which is, Tracy, would you read it again?
Oh, yeah, sure. The Governance Committee recommends to the PND that the KPFK PD hire pool be returned to the search committee. I keep screwing that up. Let me start again. The Governance Committee recommends to the PND that the KPFK PD hire pool be returned to the KPFK Search Committee for the selection of an alternate final pool.
Okay. Nothing in it about five?
No. I think it's beyond the bounds of this committee to specify the amount to the search committee. They will come up with what they come up with, but it will be a different pool than the one that the LSB is rejecting.
Okay, let's take a vote
right.
on that. I'm take me a moment here to bring back up the there it is. Okay, so a yes vote supports Tracy's motion, a no vote. Aaron?
Yes.
Sharon Margamir?
Yes.
Marilyn Burden? Lydia Brazon?
No.
Lydia?
No.
No. Bill Crozier? No?
Yes. Yes.
Asha Futran?
No.
Joseph Kay? Lizette King? Bob Lederer?
No.
Mark Paul Martin?
Yes.
Brenda Medina? Brenda, I can't hear you. Colleen O'Brien?
Abstain.
Marcel Reed? Marcel Reed? Can't hear you. I'm going to pass for the moment. Tracy Rosenberg?
Sorry, yes. I was on mute. That's no.
Okay, I got that no. John Wenger?
Yes.
Let's see. Brenda Medina, are you still there?
She's calling. Hello? Hi, vote. Vote now. Vote. Wait, she's lost the call. Can you hear her? She can't get back on.
I hear something.
Can you talk loud? Wait, hold on a second. Wait. Oh,
George. People have to be on the call to vote.
They do.
Yeah, no proxy voting, please.
It's not proxy. I'm not voting. Brenda, can you get on the call?
They must be in the same room. It doesn't make sense.
Okay, Brenda?
Yes.
Tell them what the problem is. I can't.
Hey, George.
And my phone cut off because I was in an elevator, and I'm trying to get the
We can hear you.
I'm supposed to get back on.
Brenda, we can hear you. How do you vote on Tracy's... Well,
hello.
Yes, Brenda, how do you vote?
No, I vote no.
Okay. That's okay.
Sorry.
I'm going to vote no. The motion fails. 6-6.
Yes.
Is there, okay, so that's that.
George?
Yes?
Just on the other issue, can we take up the agenda for the next meeting, or...
Well, we have another item on the agenda. We have about...
this is Ken. I just want to give a notice to reconsider.
Okay. You have to vote. You have to vote with the... You can move to rescind, but you have to vote with the...
What I meant to say. I moved to rescind. I'm a notice to rescind.
Okay.
Notice to rescind, not reconsider. Thank you, George.
Well, we can't rescind. Just as a point of order here, you can't rescind a motion that didn't pass because it didn't pass. What we can do is bring the motion forward at a future meeting, which we...
That's what you can do. That's right.
Which we will do probably at the PNB on Thursday.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
We have another item on the agenda, which is the timelines for the LSB transitions. This is Tracy's. If we have time, Lydia, we'll put on what we wanted to discuss.
Point of information, Sasha?
Yes?
So when you put things on the PNB agenda, you do say how the committee voted, right, on the issue?
Well, there's no motion coming out of the committee, so this won't come out.
It failed. You do report it was voted on and failed. Is that correct?
No.
Or does one have... All right, well, I will. Thank you. You should.
There's no motion coming out of the committee, so there's nothing to be brought forward.
Because it failed.
That's correct.
Good.
But we don't...
Thank you.
Well, anyway, I've said what I need to say about that. The item is regards to the timeline. Discussion of timeline for LSB transitions. Tracy, that's yours.
Okay. It seemed to me that we might want to think a little bit about the process that will be coming up. The reason is that, if I have the schedule correct, the counting will begin on December 11th, and then the results will be announced on December 15th, which, if we're following our bylaws, would require all of the LSBs to meet between December 15th and December 31st, which is tricky. It needs to be scheduled in order to seat the new board members by the end of December, which is what they have to do, and elect officers. And then they would also need to schedule meetings in early January in order to meet the PNB elections deadline, because you have to do that in reasonably early January in order to get people to the meeting we're supposed to have at the end of January. So basically, this is just a discussion item for making sure that we get this information out to all of the LSBs and that these meetings are scheduled so we don't run into a logjam scenario for either the seeding of the new LSBs not happening on time or the seeding of the new PMD not happening on time.
So you're just asking that we basically notify the LSBs of the press of the time of what the new timeline is. Is that correct, Tracy?
Yeah, it seemed to me there was some lack of clarity from a couple of the LSBs, so I think there should be some sort of official notification about what's required, and then if LSB members are required to meet between December 15th and New Year's, you know, people need to make plans so they can do that.
Yes, I have a concern also, which is the LSBs are supposed to meet in that period in order to consider the bylaws. I hope we can ask some of those.
This is Lydia.
But if I simply recommend, if I simply ask the chair of the board, Summer, send a notice to the LSB chairs that they be contacted. Timeline is in both accords. That's a question for you, Tracy.
Sorry, what did you say, George?
Would it serve the purpose if I sent a note to Summer as the chair of the governance committee, asking her to notify all the LSB chairs that that timeline is as you spoke it, which is to say, they have to start making plans to do that?
The answer is yes, as long as part of what you assign yourself to do is follow through that she actually does it.
And how would you suggest I do that?
Oh, you know, just the...
I will bug her a few days later to find out if it has happened.
Yes, the pesky thing.
Okay.
George, this is Lydia. Sasha, can you hear me? It's Sasha.
Lydia and R. Paul before, and I now hear Bill and
Sasha.
Okay. Lydia, R. Paul, Bill, and Sasha.
Thank you.
And this was why I voted actually against having the bylaws vote in her as well. I thought it should proceed and that everybody should just start announcing it because just a simple announcement, go to the website. That takes less than 5 seconds. But anyway, that ship has sailed. So I would just urge you to include the bylaws vote as part of that whole December timeline, how that has to be during that month. It doesn't. I mean, I guess some LSBs could elect to meet twice, one for the bylaws and for their officer election, so as not to have too lengthy of a meeting. But at least the early warning is really helpful. But just don't forget the bylaws.
Okay. I certainly won't. Paul?
Yeah, I hope the bodies meet as delegates assemblies and not as LSBs. They meet as LSBs. They're not legally doing what they should be doing. The other thing is, I've been thinking about this, and there's a bit of a crunch here, besides the fact that we're talking about LSBs having to meet in the last 2 weeks. For instance, the WBAI LSB is set to meet December 12th, and since the results won't be known till the 15th, we're going to have to, I think, put that off. And the thing is, how long, I mean, we're going to have some new people. And they will not know before December 15th that they have been elected to the Elysian fields of a wonderful LSB, and we have to look at how much notice they have to be given, because you can't, for instance, say have LSBs meeting on December 16th or 17th, because I think that wouldn't be fair to new people who wouldn't know their meeting yet, wouldn't know their members yet. So I think we need to take that into some sort of consideration, and there needs to be some period of time after the 15th to allow notification. And, you know, for instance, maybe the LSB should be told you can't meet the LSBs and the delegates assemblies should be told you can't meet less than 1 week after the 15th or something like that, because otherwise you're going to, you know, start off the LSBs with some real fights. So I think we probably need to, you know, alert everybody to the idea of you got to make sure you notify everybody, especially these brand new people, that there is a meeting, and that we can at least some degree accommodate them. That's it.
Bill.
Thank you. Well, I'm just assuming we would have two meetings in December. I know our LSB last time, and maybe the time before that when we had bylaws amendments, we had a separate meeting, a separate delegates meeting, and Paul's right, just to vote on bylaws, because they take quite a bit of time to discuss, and election of officers typically takes quite a bit of time also. So, you know, you may want to have two meetings anyway. I know that on the calendars, three of the stations that are already scheduled for the 12th, and I think they should go ahead and continue to meet then. It's also, I don't think, fair to newly elected delegates to vote on bylaws and amendments. I know, at least at our station, KPFT, I haven't seen most of the new people at any of the LSB meetings, so they're really not familiar with what we're doing and how we operate. And so, you know, they, I would encourage the LSBs to go ahead and meet in early December, vote on the bylaws, and then let's, or the second week in December, like whenever they're scheduled now, and then the second meeting for the, and that would meet as delegate assembly, and the second meeting to elect officers in later in December. And you can also notify them before the elections are finalized. It doesn't hurt to notify all of the candidates that, hey, the LSB is going to be meeting on such and such a date, and the delegates are meeting such and such a date. So save the date, and then we'll let you know later if you're elected. I think that's the simplest approach.
Sasha.
This is Sasha.
Okay.
I believe I was on the stack.
Just hold your name. Please go ahead.
Okay. I didn't hear it. So I really wish Summer was on this call, because Margie and I actually met with her on this very question last week, because Tracy started raising this issue immediately after our last board meeting when we did not set the late December date for meeting. So here's the issue. We don't know who's been elected to the LSBs until the middle of December, first of all. And then we have to notify them of a meeting. And there we are in the middle of a holiday season. And all kinds of people are going to be gone. And I think it's kind of absurd. Summer's opinion was that we've missed all kinds of deadlines with this year's election to begin with. And kind of, what was one more? And why not do the transition at the beginning of January? So I just want to throw that out there for you to consider. And if you think about it, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. Why on earth would you throw a bunch of bylaws amendments to people who don't know anything about the bylaws to begin with or how we function, perhaps? I mean, whole batches of, you know, several of them for sure will not. Some will be elected who are familiar with things. They've been on the board before. They're on the staff. But at least half will not have a clue as to what's going on. And I hate to tell you this, holding a meeting, you know, in the winter holiday season, an extra meeting is, to me, really difficult. And I would really strongly advise against this. I wish Summer were on this call. I know she is not in favor of doing this, unless she's changed her mind in the last week. But we did sit down with her, and we did have a discussion about the issue, because, as I said to Margie right away when Tracy started about the KPFA LSB, that applies to all five stations. It's not just us. So it's a PNB. It's a, you know, it's a Pacifica issue. It's not a KPFA issue. But I would certainly, you know, advise that you take into consideration that we have missed all kinds of election deadlines already this election season. What the heck is one more?
Tracy for the staff.
Yeah, I'd like to say something myself. It sounds to me like if we can get a meeting after the 11th and before the 15th to approve the bylaws, at least, then the question of when in the following period, there has to be, as I see it, two LSB meetings, a LSB meeting to seat the new board, and then a meeting to elect the PMB delegates sometime between then and the end of January. But it doesn't seem like it has to be in December. Although, I'm sorry, our bylaws require that it be in December, don't they?
Yes, okay. They do. But our bylaws require other things having to do with the election that we've totally disregarded. So what the heck?
Which I don't find a very good reason for.
No, but I mean, why are we stumbling over this one? We're in holiday season, and a lot of people are going to be out of town. And it is a terrible way to introduce people to these board meetings, which are rather, you know, as I call it, doing hard time anyway.
Tracy, you want to speak? Tracy?
Yeah, our election schedules are in the bylaws, but there's plenty of wording there about the discretion of the board and the discretion of the collection supervisor to change them, and they've been changed numerous times over the years. However, when you're talking about the terms of elected members, that's a little trickier, and that's where you get into legal problems, and there's no discretionary language about the option of the foundation or the convenience of the foundation or the decision of the foundation to change that December stuff. So to me, that's one of those bylaws we have to pay attention to, and I think we've got to seat the new members in December. That's their right. They've been elected. They need to be seated. And we do need to elect officers in December. There's a very specific reason why we don't collect officers and PNB folk at the same meeting. Again, that's in the bylaws without discretion. So I don't think that we really have much choice. And so the point is to plan ahead how to follow the bylaws and schedule these LSB meetings between the 15th and the 18th of December, when most people haven't left for the holidays yet, and those who have might be away for most of December. You never know. Our PNB collections are generally in the first week of January, and people are also away the first week of January, but that's what the bylaws say. It's a question of really planning ahead and letting people know, you know, what they're going to have to do. Either or both of these meetings can be extremely short, and in fact, the seating of the board and the officers' collections can take about half an hour on a weeknight. People are organized. And again, the early January board meeting also does not have to sustain. People are not able to do that, but I don't think we really have a discretionary choice here. And as a governance committee, it would be silly for us to recommend doing something that the bylaws don't really permit the PNB to do.
Joseph in KPFD, I just got on.
Hi, Joe.
Anyone else want to speak to this question?
Lydia?
Hey, Lydia.
Yes, I actually agree with Tracy. A continuing breach is not acceptable just because we've not complied this whole past year, and we keep our fingers crossed nothing will come of it. So anyway, that's one. And the other thing is that the bylaws have always scheduled all of these years, right or wrong, that December seating. I'm not thrilled with it. I would like to see maybe a bylaws change about it, but nevertheless. So we're accustomed to even the late December because there's always at least one or two stations that don't make quorum. So they inevitably have to have their seating later. But the extension of terms and so forth, that actually is one of the things that is pretty hard and fast and does take you into a dangerous area, which is why the whole election period was not taken into the next year, because then you are talking about California Corp and so forth. So that's actually why we're cramming now. If we thought we had a legal option of extending terms and going into early part of next year to have these elections, we would have, but that's what stopped us. So I have to agree we have to just bite the bullet on this one.
Okay, so if there's no further discussion, I'm going to do what's been suggested, which is alerts Summer that she needs to tell the LSD chairs that they need to follow the bylaws and that they will have to do these meetings in December. I will try to get them to her. I will try to get her to. I will to ask her to tell the LSB chairs to convene delegates assembly meetings to vote on the bylaws prior to December 15th and after, I think, December 11th. I don't know whether it's 11th or 10th or 12th, those days when the 60 days runs out. Let's see if we can make that happen. And I make that as a request to all of you who are on the committee to speak with your LSB chairs and see if you can encourage them to actually follow through. We are almost out of time. Lydia, you had something you wanted to suggest about...
Well, I was just going to ask the committee if we think we need to have a governance committee meeting next month. We're not obliged to have committee meetings every single month. This the agenda that George sent out was kind of light for us today, and since we have so much stuff to do at the LSD levels, I mean, here at K, we're going to be having a fundraiser for the station. The LSD will be organized, I believe. We're working on that, but in early December and so forth. So I don't know if we have any compelling issues that we know of. Is there any reason we should have or we must have or a meeting next month in November?
What I'd like to suggest is that if they come up in the next month, that you send them by email to me we'll see if we have a sufficient agenda. And let's see, I could take a vote by email as to whether or not we want to have an official meeting, I suppose, with whatever agenda we've got at that point. I don't want to preclude the possibility that something that really does engage our attention and energy comes up in the next month that we really need to meet on by, you know, voting not to have a meeting now. So if there's no objection, I'd like to handle it that way.
Our poll for...
Yeah, our poll, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the... First of all, yeah, we already have voted to have... for the meeting mm-hmm. schedule, so we have one scheduled for next month. I would suggest that the way to do this is sort of in the opposite way. We already have a meeting scheduled, and we voted for it. Why not just see if there's nothing to do, we can always poll the committee to say, do we want to cancel the meeting?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would suggest.
Yeah, that would be correct.
That's what I was suggesting, and I would do that, I don't know, let's say the week before.
Yeah, George?
Yeah, Lydia?
Yeah, and I would just recommend that it be with the same notice that you would be required to notice a meeting and per the bylaws. And also, because the other issue is, too, is that we asked to be streamed. Are we streamed tonight, I hope? Anyway,
yeah,
we asked to be streamed, and so it requires, you know, a lot of staff scheduling now because we have so many committee meetings. So, you know, unless we really need to meet, I think that would be good. And I would be fine with that if the 7 or 10 days I would get LSD and PNP mixed up in advance that decision be made.
Okay. Let's do that then. We are out of time. I want to thank you all for being here and your commitment and the seriousness of the discussion. Good night all.
Good night.
Good night.